Hello, everybody. It's time again. Welcome back to Setting Sails, Navigating AI in Higher Education. Like last year, I will be talking to experts at the University of Zurich about their thoughts on AI in four episodes in this December. This is a podcast about rethinking teaching to create better education for everyone, with or without AI. In this episode, we will discuss the role of teaching in the age of AI. My name is Alexandra Jansky. I'm the leader of the Innovation and Digital Education team at the University of Zurich. And today I'm going to talk with Joscha Weidlich. He's an expert on didactics of digital higher education. Well, since October, you've been assistant professor for digital higher education. That's a joint professorship affiliated with both the University of Zurich and the Zurich University of Teacher Education. Your task is to strengthen topics of digital change in university teaching in Zurich. Did you have a good start?
Yeah, I've had a good start. I've been getting to know the city a little bit, meeting a lot of people. As I'm pretty much working at two institutions, I'm meeting a lot more people. So that's interesting. And I'm just getting to know everything and getting started and thinking about how to make this professorship fulfill its purpose and idea of connecting the institutions, and I want to build a team. So
I'm really glad that it works so well for you so far, and I'm very happy to talk to you about this exciting development of AI today and what it means for higher education.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks.
Actually, in an incredible short time, AI has become very common in education. Teachers use ChatGPT or other generative AI tools to prepare lessons, revise their texts, translate papers, and so on. And of course, students also use AI tools for their studies. Meanwhile, AI got smarter and will get smarter in the future. What do you think? Will teachers disappear in the future? Will they be replaced by avatars? What about the professors? So what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's an easy question in a sense, because I don't think teachers will disappear, nor should they. But avatars may play a larger role in the future. Whatever an avatar could be in this sense, it's probably going to get more realistic, have more abilities, can adapt better to students. In that sense, I think it can fulfill a good purpose. But teachers are something else entirely, and I think that's here to stay.
So when you say teachers are something else entirely, but still, of course, teachers will use AI, education will change through AI. So what is it, maybe a shared work between teachers and AI?
Yeah, I think we'll see increasingly more hybrid approaches, and I think there are many possible kinds. I think right now we already have hybrid approaches ongoing, but they're kind of hidden. It's students using AI to, for example, help them in their assessments or assignments. We don't have a reliable number for how prevalent this is, but I'm sure it's a lot. And I think this hidden secret hybrid approach is maybe not the best, but I think we can come up with models and designs that utilize the new developments of AI to support students and also help teachers.
Do you use AI for your teaching?
I have just started in Zurich, so I haven't really had any teaching duties yet. So right now I'm planning classes I'm going to do soon. And so far I haven't used it yet. But of course, I use AI for different purposes. When I write papers, I sometimes help get suggestions. Sometimes I'll brainstorm ideas, paper titles, for example. I think there's many ways where AI is really, really helpful. But in a sense, you always still have to own the final product. And I think this gets to the heart of the whole issue.
Yeah, totally right. So. Yeah, AI can take a lot of your work off your hands. So for sure, AI already makes teaching easier and will continue to do so. Well, if AI does a lot of work for you and you save time, that would also mean that teachers would have more time to focus on other aspects maybe.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do they focus on other aspects, and which aspects should that be?
Yeah, I think in general, there's the hope that AI can bring gains in efficiency, and this is on a societal level, you know, people being more efficient at work, making more money. So I think that's one reason there's like a whole economic system interested in what AI can do. But I think it also applies for the educational profession. There it's not so much about, you know, making more money, but I think we can also hope that teachers, being very busy people, will have more time to what we think matters most, and that is supporting students, helping students. Right now, so much time is spent on grading. So, I mean, you could argue that millions and billions of dollars or euros are spent on, or Schweizer Franken are spent on grading. And this is something where an AI would like excel at, like giving, like assessing student assignments, student work, finding strength, weaknesses, giving feedback. And I think this is where AI can be pretty good at. So maybe there's some hope that students can get better teacher support, more teacher support. Yeah,
and also a bit personalized maybe. But of course there are also fields that are problematic. So I think not every task can be given to AI. For example, when you left tasks to AI, then you lack maybe of social activities or social interactions. Usually you would talk to your colleague, now you talk to AI, but also privacy issues and so on. So I wonder how the competencies of teachers and AI should be divided. So what should be left to AI? So what's the competence of AI, and what needs the competence of human intelligence?
Yeah. Well, I think one big idea, and as I mentioned this earlier, is the idea of ownership. So somebody has to own the decisions that come out at the end. And this is also a reason why, for example, in learning analytics or already long existing research discipline of AI in education has had the idea of, or the notion of, human in the loop. So the AI system can gather data and could in principle make informed decisions based on data. But human in the loop means that there's always a human that needs to oversee and approve important decisions. So this is actually an ethical principle. We're not even looking at this point at skills or competences yet, but it's an ethical normative thing, I think. But but you can also say, the teacher has to own decision because somebody has to own it. And the AI system is not an agent. It's just a product. And companies do not want to be responsible for, you know, what happens with this product outside of their, you know, maybe limited use cases. But we can also think about what is AI really good at. And I think this is something where we all learned a lot in the last 2 years. I always thought there were surely domains that AI could never excel at, like genuinely human domains, like, for example, writing beautiful prose. So we all learned that AI is indeed capable of that. So I think we all have to update a little bit on what could be shared domains, competences, or who's better at what. But more generally, I think education is a genuinely humanistic endeavor. So I think we do need human touch. And I think that's what I also mentioned earlier. That's why I think teachers can't be replaced. We and students want to have somebody who has also maybe gone to school, who has done or experienced thing that we have experienced too, who can understand us. And I think in AI, we can't have that illusion, but we know deep down this is not, it's not the same. So I think that's an important part too.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's get a bit more specific on the topic. So as we know, in certain areas, AI has already proven itself in teaching. So you already said so. And you have done a lot of research in digital education. Could you tell us what already works well and what not, and give us maybe also some examples?
Yeah, of course. I'd love to. So I have to say that generally there is already a huge literature on educational technology or online learning and all of this way before AI or the COVID pandemic. So we have a lot of knowledge. A lot of papers have been written, studies been done. So yeah, we have an idea of what works and what doesn't in some extent, but we can also more fundamentally, we can, from what we know about how humans learn, what are the processes that underlie it, we can also, if we know these principles, these basic guidelines of how this all works, we can also judge new incoming technologies or changes and see, well, is it something new actually? Is learning changed? And then we can also predict if it's going to be effective. An example is there's a lot of research showing that computer-based feedback, I'm saying computer-based, not AI-based feedback, to some purpose, because computer-based feedback has been around for really long. There are meta-analyses, so big studies that synthesize other studies, saying that computer-based feedback is more effective than teacher feedback. And that's, sounds paradoxical at first. But if you think about when these studies were done, they were done often in the 80s and 90s already, we can understand that there must be some way this computer-based feedback was in a way different than teacher feedback. Because the limitations of what was possible then, it probably focused very much on observable performance and did not get the, interpersonal stuff, or did not look at, much more like nuanced, maybe semantic aspects of the essay and stuff like that. That wasn't possible. So what we had is probably feedback that was something like task XY was incorrect. The correct answer would have been Z, or look at this material again. This feels a bit cold and dry, and maybe we would think, okay, better feedback should be, you still show some weaknesses in algebra, or you did a great job. The problem with the second is that it's a statement about the self, the individual, whereas the other feedback actually points to aspects of performance that can be changed. So it can lead students to exert more effort to change this aspect of performance. So we have totally different potential feedbacks. And in this case, it's a contingency of what was possible technologically at the time. We can, even from basic fundamental principles of how humans learn and how feedback exerts effects, we can actually predict that one is better than the other. More generally, I think feedback is a huge lever to potentially improve education. Quality feedback is still expensive to make. Teachers usually have to do it, and they have to sit down and think hard and a lot, and then give information that is usable. So teachers' workload is always a bottleneck in feedback. And I think there with AI now, there is so much more possibilities. You could say, okay, it's here. We just have to figure out the details, but that may be a little too easy. One final thing is, I think AI alone can't make education better. You could even argue that AI usually helps us avoid learning in a way. So I think we really have to look at very specific circumstances in a way to foster learning with AI. And I think this is still a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Now, you already said a lot about your study. You were looking into feedback. So you were looking in how successful or unsuccessful learning with digital formats can be. And you already described a bit, but you were telling us from older studies done with computer feedback. I would be interested in what you have done. So can you just explain a bit in a few sentences what exactly you looked at and what the results were?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the recent research on feedback we've been doing is, has been learning analytics feedback. So learning analytics just means that when students learn in online environments, they generate a host of potentially relevant data. When they engage in a learning task, we don't only get data about how they performed at the end or what came out of this learning task, but we have the whole process of getting there. So we have behavioral or process data is what it's called, and which is a huge potential source of information. You can just take this data and present it to students in so-called dashboards. This is has been done a lot. Or you could predict that some students may fail or run into troubles based on their behavior. Maybe they have unproductive learning behaviors, and you can predict that statistically. And then you could inform teachers or the students themselves. Or you can try to give them highly personalized written feedback on their performance in a task. This is what we've been working on in some of our recent projects. So what you have to do is you need to design learning tasks so that the data emerging from them is interpretable and relevant. For a while, researchers thought, well, if we just get the data that falls out of the learning environments, we can just, you know, use sophisticated algorithms and techniques, and then we'll be able to predict what happens. But the thing is, you still really have to interpret this data so much. Like, there's so much interpretation, and you can just simply be wrong, because what you want to know is about student learning. But what you have is how many times did the student click on this material, or how long did he take to read this text, and it's really hard to infer anything about the human mind from there, or just observable learning processes. So what we found out is that we have to get away from this easily accessible data to data that is really meaningful, and this means we might only be able to use learning analytics in a very strong sense if we do it on dedicated or purposefully designed learning tasks. So, for example, if you ask students to analyze something, a text, some artifact, a video, and write a text reporting the analysis or making a judgment call, you can do it in groups or individual. You could, for example, structure the task in a way that there are certain phases, and these phases have sub-goals, in-between goals, that are associated with specific learning processes. For example, first look at, highlight the key elements of the text and extract meaningful information or something like that. And so the behavior that happens in this phase is plausibly indicative of the behavior of these cognitive processes you designed these tasks for. And then if the student has different behavior or similar behavior in the next phase, we can say, okay, this probably relates to this cognitive process. So what you then have is you can actually make much more meaningful statements about where students are doing well or where they're having trouble. So it's less of a guessing game in a way. And Hendrik Traxler from DIPF, where I worked before, he called such tasks data-enriched learning activities, DELAs, and they are one important way to make learning analytics highly informative, as he says. So this is the goal, make it highly informative to students. And for that, you have to put in a lot of a priori work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that would also mean that you design the tasks you give. So like teachers have to design the tasks to give to students the way that students or like an AI, for example, could understand the data better and can give meaningful feedback, as far as I understood. So if you have like large groups, that's probably the advantage of using AI. Then the one way is to get the data to and like all the problems about data privacy and stuff like this, that an AI can run over the data. But the other thing is that the data needs to be designed so that the AI can do something with it.
Yeah, it's not even about the AI so much as that we first need to be able to know what the data means. You cannot imagine the amount of data that comes out of a learning environment if, let's say, 50 students do learning activities, exchange ideas over the course of a few weeks. It is so much. But this is like typical like click data or log data. And it's just the problem is like, what does any of it even mean? And mm-hmm. people have tried to come up with ideas. I'm personally not convinced that we really learn what we want to learn from this data, and that's why we have to think hard and deep about the processes we want to elicit in these students, and then we can talk about what the data means, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we are not there yet to actually use AI for feedback.
I think we are there. It's challenging to make it work in practice, I think, but we are definitely there. And the research projects we've done, where we've had success in generating this highly personalized feedback for hundreds of students. But I have to say also, we started this project before the very modern versions of like generative AI, like large language models were around. So we used earlier and, how do you say, like specific large language models to, for example, examine what students wrote and stuff. So we did use it for that. But we still had to come up with like some like templates or feedback designs that were triggered depending on which behavior. And I think with Gen AI, I think you can make it even more flexible. But the generative AI will not know what the data means if you don't help it point it into the right direction. The AI can't know it. We have to, as educators, we have to know.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So maybe on the other hand, on like the user side, students, when they get feedback from AI, do you know, do they accept feedback from AI? Because you already said like we need to learn, we need the interaction with humans. Now we are talking about personalized feedback coming from an AI.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, AI is one of many, or feedback is one of many components in any educational experience. And I think there can be good reasons to supplement some of this or give it some of it to an AI feedback system. But you make a great point, is that we don't only have the idea, okay, how can we get personalized feedback using AI off the ground and running, and what makes it good? No, we actually have to look at the other side of the coin too. We give this feedback to a human, and you could say arguably it's even more interesting what students do or do not do with feedback. If you think about it, if you give feedback, you hopefully set off a chain of events. Students have to be aware of the feedback. They have to attend to it, use their cognitive resources to look at it, read it, processes. They have to understand what it means. They have to accept the message. They have to translate it into perhaps actionable steps, and then they actually have to take the steps if we want it to have any effect. Or in other words, if we want our feedback to have any kind of splash on the students, it has to have ripples all the way to this last step, actually. So that's a long way. We have to get through students in a way. So that's why we do have to look a lot at like how students attend to, process, and engage with feedback. And there are different concepts of this that try to capture student differences in this. For example, feedback literacy. We can talk about that some more if you want. But to answer your question more generally, do students accept AI feedback? It depends. Students react differently to feedback in many different various ways. And AI, as a feature of the feedback, is one of the many design decisions and features that students can react to positively or negatively. And there's also research on some of this, but yeah, we can get into that if you want.
Yeah, but what I really would be interested in is, do they kind of trust? So because, you know, if I know someone very good, and he tells me what you've done, Alexandro, was not good, do it differently, I would take it different than if somebody I don't know would give it. And now there is a machine telling me, okay, please do this again or maybe change this. So do students really trust it, the feedback? Do you know something about that?
Yeah, that's another good point. What we have to distinguish is between do students like it, do they accept and trust it, or what effects does it have? There's a whole large literature telling us that students don't always know what's good for them in a sense. So for example, if you let them choose an instructional approach for teaching, they reliably choose the least effective one and they hate the one that works best. That's because learning is really hard and doesn't feel great. If you have these nice feelings of fluency in your learning process, you're probably not learning that much. It's a really a tough process if you think about it. It's not always pleasant. So that's why feedback can also be effective if it's critical. But yes, there has to be underlying, even if the students don't love it, they have to accept it and maybe trust the source to an extent. And if you wonder about, can the source be trusted? We get into another research area that looks, for example, at explainable AI. There is research on, for example, human trust in automated systems, like, for example, autonomous cars, where you can imagine that trust plays a pretty big role. And so this is what psychology and human factors, they do a lot of research in this. And one good lever to enhance trust is make the system more transparent or explainable. So show what goes into decisions, what are the principles underlying it. That usually helps people to trust a system, and in this case also probably students. But this is actually pretty fresh research, because while we've been looking at AI and education for a long time, I think now we're really at a point where these systems can be utterly opaque. They can like be absolutely non-understandable for an outsider, but have really great functions. So I think in this tension, there's a lot of room for mistrust. And so I think it becomes more important to look at design features, system features that reliably promote trust in a sense. Yeah.
That probably also big companies taking this into account now when we think about the thinking process of Claude, where you can now see how it came to the decision. But just as a side note, I was just wondering when you were telling me, of course, it's cool feedback. Students seem to take it seriously. And it also sounds like that AI supported feedback could be a big relief for the teachers because they don't have to do this on their own. They have now a buddy helping them or even take it from their hands. But consequently, how does the teacher manage to keep track of and react to things, the students? So because if the teacher gave individual feedback, then the teacher would know where the students are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in a sense, the teacher has the responsibility of owning everything that happens in the classroom. So I think that doesn't go away. But I agree, if you outsource some of the activities that usually help you to gain information, to learn about students, if you outsource that, of course, there's the possibility that you don't have this information. But I think it's really not that big of a problem because in this case, the AI has the information. It has to have the information or it couldn't make any meaningful decisions or support you in your decision making. So in this case, it's just a matter of also giving this information to the teacher. Now, that's not entirely trivial because, again, these systems, these AI systems are really opaque. They're hard to understand. So, but you can, for example, there's research on teacher dashboards. So where you can, feed students their information in form of dashboards. You can also feed student or classroom information back to the teachers and help them understand. So where do students have weaknesses? Which students need some help? And there are ways to visualize this and to, help teachers make data-driven decisions, hopefully. So, that's underway for sure. But again, one of the many things are not at all solved or anything, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm just talking about unsolved. I'm not sure if it is unsolved, but I feel like that there might be also some, ethical or also privacy issues. Because if the teacher is only getting filtered information from a machine back, then maybe some of the information is missing, which would make the teacher to do another decision. So so to decide maybe, sometimes it decides on career path, for example.
Exactly.
So what do you think about, when it comes to privacy, is there already a way to deal with that? Or is it just an open question? Like in many other areas with AI, we need to deal.
Yeah, I think there's two questions here. One is the ethical question, and that's really who makes the decisions, who owns them. And I already talked about that a little bit. I think there's at this point no way to avoid that the teacher makes any or all impactful decisions. It's similar with the autonomous driving, right? Right now, the car producers want this, right? They want you to be responsible for what happens. They don't want to be responsible for if the car crashes. So you have to put your hands on the steering wheels every 30 seconds or something. You are still responsible. So we always need a responsible adult in the room when it comes to educational decisions. And so there's no way around that. But in terms of data privacy, that's a whole different can of worms, I think. For research purposes, it's not so complicated because students have to agree to the usage of their data. We have to have ethical clearance, data privacy clearance from the institution. So there's a process for that. To get, for example, the ethical clearance or even the data privacy clearance, we have to make plausible that we need this data and that this data will benefit students and we will treat it confidentially. And there we get into just also technical questions. So where is the data? On which server is it anonymized? When is it anonymized? Can we use it for later research purposes? Again, those are all nitty-gritty questions, but I feel they don't really get at the heart of what's interesting in this sense. So I think there's due process for that. Just as an example, you can, for example, have students decide on their degree of privacy, and then this, of course, limits the functionalities of the system to some extent. This is pretty complex to implement because you have to have granular levers of privacy and functionality. But it seems, at least this is what from last I heard, is that across the board, students don't really care as much as we think. They often choose little privacy for more features. And I think this kind of resonates with, I don't know how probably many people, for example, click on accept when something pops up on the browser. So I'm not surprised about that, to be honest. Now, that doesn't mean it's not important to think about, does the data go to some company? What happens with data? Educational data is very sensitive. So there's all important questions. I'm not debating that. But I think for most of these, there's a good process in place.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So for all the advantages, there are also disadvantages. We also talked a bit about the privacy, but also for the learning process, I think there are some disadvantages. And the learning process is tied to cognitive development. So the learning process and cognitive development should be supported. Isn't there the risk of leaving thinking to a machine? So in other words, how do you encourage can we encourage critical thinking when AI takes so much thinking of our students' hands?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is what I mentioned earlier briefly when I said I think the natural tendency is that AI helps us avoid learning. I think this is a key point. And I think universities, for example, are grappling with this as we speak. Or if they're not grappling with it, they're not paying attention, because I think this is a big deal. I said earlier that learning can be hard and unpleasant. It's not always nice. And today it's easier than ever to get quick help via AI. It's always been possible, ever since the internet and you had books and there's been study material, it's always been possible. But my God, is it easy now. So what this means is essentially when we have carefully designed learning tasks and assessments and they are supposed to tap or trigger these underlying processes responsible for learning, and if they no longer trigger the cognitive process or we can't ensure that they do, students are not learning and we are not assessing the competences we think we're assessing. So there's now a shortcut to results without processing. That's such a big deal if you think about it. Unless we find a way to either block the shortcut, which would mean banning AI in certain circumstances or being able to reliably detect it, which is not possible so far, or we make the shortcut part of a longer, let's say, cognitive hike, where it's only one section or two sections where you can use AI, but we still have to make a lot of this work or thinking, we still have to do it. Maybe perhaps in tasks that are much more open-ended and where AI can't really give us all the input we need. Something in the real world, perhaps, where somebody's not sitting on a computer. You can think about oral exams, for example. But I think there are still some pretty creative ways. But I think we have to adapt to that. Finding new and innovative ways to reliably foster and assist learning in the age of AI, I think will decide whether university degrees will remain valuable for future generations. So I think it's a huge deal. Yeah.
I really like the quote of making the shortcut longer. It sounds a bit like my shortcuts usually are, that they are longer. So I think it's a perfectly fitting conclusion to all. So to complete the arc of today's episode. So thank you so much for this interesting talk. And thank you for being with me in the studio today. And thank you, listeners, for joining us here in the podcast Setting Sails, Navigating AI in Higher Education. My name is Alexandra Jansky, and this is a podcast from the Educational Development Team of the University of Zurich in cooperation with LearnNets, a company that drives innovation in education. In the next episode, we will meet Claudia Witt. She's a professor of complementary and integrative medicine and is involved in a very exciting AI medicine project, the Digital Twin. The next episode will be released on 13th of December. Join us again. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share your feedback, questions, and topic that interests you by sending an email to teachingtools@education.uzh.ch. All this information is provided in the show notes. Have a look. See you next time.